across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Where we are getting set at 6 past the hour to talk to Mark Jacob, joining us a few minutes earlier this week to talk about media coverage of this week's big stories. Then, in our second half hour, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, who now has a weekend show here across the Civic Media Radio Network, will talk about some of the legal issues that the former president is immersed in between campaign rallies as part of his courthouses and campaigns tour. We'll talk to Dan Schumacher about sports as we head into the weekend, and any input that you'd like to give us as well at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can call that. You can text it. Love to hear what's going on in your neck of the woods. You can use social media as well, much like Rob does every morning to check in from Tigerton, where he tells us it's 33 degrees, a quarter inch of rain overnight, and black ice on some of the roads in Shawano County, which does not surprise me at all when you take a look at the temperatures. And I'm not even going to read them off this time, Brittany Merlot, because they are literally every single one of them is the same temperature from an hour ago. There has been zero change. Everybody is basically either at 34 or 35 degrees, a little bit above freezing, but still very much deserving of caution on the roads. What do you want to tell us about it, Brittany?
Yeah, absolutely. So our temperatures are ranging from 32 to 39 degrees statewide. And our colder spots are, of course, in the areas that always get really cold, like Antigo, Mountain, you're below freezing. So that's why, Shawano, you're not too far away. I suspect those county roads are, of course, a little slick and slippery as well, because we've got the dense fog throughout the state. Now, it's worse. The visibilities are less than a mile in towards Eau Claire, Superior, Black River Falls, La Crosse as well. You guys still have a dense fog advisory until 10 this morning. But statewide, there's areas of fog that are going to linger through at least tomorrow morning. So keep that in mind, of visibility being reduced. And it's all because of the snowmelt. Temperatures today climbing into the upper 30s. So a lot of us above freezing right now, which is a good thing for the morning commute. I was worried about places north that would drop below freezing, and thankfully there's only a couple. So we're not worried about too many slick and slippery roads. A good chunk of us are just fine and above freezing. So we're going to see rain start to increase a little bit. The system slowed down. So it's been really hitting Illinois. There's flood watches out there. But as it moves back into the state, it will start to give a lot more of us. A good half of the state will see rain from about 11 till 5. Thankfully, the temperatures will be in the upper 30s, so it's just going to be rain. Up to the north, there's a possibility in towards Tomahawk, Wausau, Wisconsin Rapids, maybe Green Bay, where we could see it flip to some light wintry mix overnight, but very small chance of that. So just a lot of melting going on. In fact, in the past 3 days, Milwaukee area has lost 5 inches of snow from the melting. And that's liquid equivalent to about 2 inches total so far that's melted of actual water. So you start to think about localized flooding concerns, and especially your house too leaking as well. So keep in mind that as temperatures do drop below freezing over the weekend, we could see some ice clogging in those gutters too.
It seems like it was only, what, 2 weeks ago when temperatures were well below zero, and we thought, well, now we're finally getting winter underway, and people thought maybe they'd go ice fishing or snowmobiling, and that we've been so focused on the slick roads, we've kind of missed the other story this week of where'd winter go? Where did the actual, you know, frozen lakes snowmobile trail winter go? And it's not going to be back anytime real soon, right?
No, it's not. It's pretty sad. I was watching all the snowmobile trails close this week, cross-country skiing, fat biking, all trails. They want you to stay off because they're basically turning into mud. And if they can preserve any snow, they want you to try to. But it's so sad because I love enjoying the snowfall. So I got about a week of it besides the freezing cold because it's too dangerously cold to enjoy it. But warm temperatures next week too. So it's a spring melt.
Well, we've got all of February to go through yet, so we'll see how it goes. Brittany Merlot, thanks so much. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
All right. Good to see you. And thanks again for keeping us updated on the weather throughout the course of the day. And Rob's noting as well, missing the old-fashioned winters that we used to have. Amen, Rob. Same here. But we appreciate you putting comments up on Facebook and everybody else who does or calls or texts us along the way. Let's visit with Mark Jacob now, who is going to talk to us about the things that have been big stories this week and some of the coverage of them. And some of it is going to sound a little broken record-y because it just kind of feels like we're being punked by the headline writers of the New York Times. Mark, good morning. How are you?
Doing pretty well, Pat.
Okay. I'm trying to think of where to start, and I have to start with the one from Tuesday. Here's the New York. See, the president came to town. He came to Superior, talked up the good economy, talked about all the infrastructure stuff. And yet here's the New York Times headline on Tuesday. Biden can't bank on good economic sentiment. Increase in confidence is not a guarantee of more votes. Honest to goodness, Mark, what does he have to do besides go door to door and put $100 bills in people's pockets for the New York Times to recognize what the economy looks like?
It is amazing. The New York Times just, they had another headline this morning that was just, blew me away. And my point is that they feel like they've got to throw shade on every good news thing that happens. Every news event that goes the American people's way or goes Biden's way, they've just got to throw shade on it. And they think that makes them seem savvy. Like they're, well, we're not sophisticated. We're not going to like just buy this good news. But it really just makes them seem, kind of a parody of themselves in a lot of ways. The thing about it is that they've been really throwing bad vibes at the Biden economy for, a couple of years now. And the facts have just been, flying in the face of the spin. And I think people will finally get it. Witness that, Pat. You see how Trump is, saying, well, I sure hope the economy crashes before the election. I mean, he's saying that. So I think there are some people who hate good news.
There are especially if they can be politically motivated in some way or another. And we're going to try to work on your sound level as well. It's a little bit quiet, but we'll, I can scream well enough for both of us because here's another one from Politico. And this was from yesterday when, look, Joe Biden walked the picket lines with the United Auto Workers. He was unapologetically supportive of workers, knowing full well that sometimes can get a president in trouble. You're supposed to be all the want people back to work and producing things. But anyway, the UAW gave Biden the endorsement yesterday or the day before. The headline in Politico says, Biden gets UAW endorsement after a noticeable delay. Whatever that's supposed to mean, and somebody else rightly corrects their headline. The correct headline would have been, President Biden gets the earliest UAW endorsement in decades. Because again, that's the headline that has perspective, looks at past presidential cycles, not just whether you feel there's been a delay before this endorsement, Mark. And that's such a huge shortcoming, I think, in too many media writers.
Right. I mean, it's that they don't remember yesterday. They don't remember last year. They don't, it's all what somebody told them. And also, Pat, what's wrong with actually just delivering the news? I mean, I think there's this kind of overanalysis that just tries to find some sort of silly spin on it instead of saying that the United Auto Workers has endorsed the president. And if you want a spin, a good spin is that he's probably the most pro-union president maybe ever. I mean, it's not like presidents before even made any comment about these auto worker negotiations with the automakers, but he went in and helped solve it. He helped solve the situation in a way that the auto workers got a great contract. The auto industry is doing pretty darn well. I don't understand that in these troubled times, why the news media doesn't like success.
Well, here's our latest example that I found on your Twitter feed here. Again, New York Times headline. It's boom times for Obamacare. Will it last? a record 21 million people signed up for marketplace plans in 2024, drawn in part by expanded subsidies that are set to expire after next year. So again, that's next year when almost anything can happen between now and then. But again, after a record number of people sign up for Obamacare marketplace plans, it's will it last? I mean, well, why?
You know, I like to joke that the New York Times headline for the Super Bowl would be Kansas City Chiefs win Super Bowl, putting pressure on them to repeat next year.
Yeah.
You know, that would be a typical New York Times headline, which casts negative view on positive news.
It works both ways, by the way, because here was an opinion piece in the Washington Post this week, I believe. Opinion: Trump is authentic, appealing, and funny, and that's what makes him dangerous. Again, I swear to God, these aren't made up, Mark. They're not. They're real.
Yeah, I know, and that was the Washington Post, and you know, I posted that on social media, and my view of that was, you know, you really don't need to publish everything that somebody sends you an email offering. I mean, you don't. There's, you know, edit better is what is my philosophy of that, and nobody thinks that. I mean, nobody with a brain thinks Trump is charming. He's not funny either. I mean, this idea that he's some sort of like great humorist. No, it's like his jokes are almost always at the expense of people. They're not. They're just dumb jokes. I mean, you know, I don't know what to say about that. I don't know why the Washington Post publishes that other than to say, hey, we're really fair. But they're not really fair. They're really stupid.
Yeah. I mean, I would come back to, I believe it was Politico or Politico Magazine that did a piece about, you know, what they thought was the typical New Hampshire voter. And it was, you know, just this one guy, you know, about my age or so. And there shouldn't be any reason for him to be such an angry soul. And yet he is. It was it was Politico. The headline is "Our system needs to be broken, and he's the man to do it." Is this guy talking about how Trump needs to break the country, even though it would again break the country for no good reason?
Right. Well, you know, speaking of breaking the country, I don't know if you've talked much about this border deal that Trump is trying to sabotage. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, think about it. So the Republicans have been complaining about the border deal. You know, it's compromise. They've been complaining that we need one, that we need to, you know, fix the border. That's all you hear. And yet when actual people in Congress try to fix the problem, you know, try to do actual government, not just politics, you know, he tells them, stop. Don't do it. Don't do it until, you know, because I need it as an issue.
He doesn't, right.
They don't want a solution. They want to exploit it.
I need something to run on rather than actual accomplishments. More with Mark Jacob in just about 90 seconds. You're listening to Up North News Radio on this Friday. Just making note that Andrew Ridgely celebrates a birthday today. Again, today's history lesson and musical memories every morning at about 6:50 here on Up North News Radio. Mark Jacob back with us now, talking about some of the headlines of the week. And before the break, we were getting into this whole notion of saying that one of your big policy things, one of the big things you want to get done, is the border. All we ever hear about is the border. And we talked to Senator Tammy Baldwin this week, you know, again, who's trying to get something done on the border, recognizes that fentanyl is a major problem. 1,400 deaths in Wisconsin in 2022 as part of the opioid epidemic. We need border security, but when you've got one party, in this case the Republicans, screaming about the border, but, you know, won't do anything but a my way or the highway approach. It just kind of exposes it for the sham that it is, Mark, but I just don't know if voters are picking up on that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about, you just have to hope that the voters know what results are and know that the whole performance of the House Republicans in this session has been, you know, goofy investigations, crazy hearings, you know, showing nude pictures insane stuff, but not delivering anything for the American people. And you have to hope that that message will go through. I hope the Democrats will do that at some point.
You would hope so. And these are the kinds of things that you talk about through your Stop the Presses newsletter and your Media Misses video. So what are some of the things that you're working on those fronts?
Well, on Media Misses, which is I do with Stephen Beschloss, who also has a newsletter, we talked this week, and that's online now at stopthepresses.news, is we talked about Abby Phillip, the CNN person, on the New Hampshire election night, you know, talking about how, well, nobody likes Biden, nobody likes Trump. This is just a contest of two really old people, and the first person who dumps their 80-year-old is going to win. Well, number one, nobody's going to dump their 80-year-old. It's pretty obvious it's going to be Trump versus Biden. And the idea that nobody likes Trump, nobody likes Biden is kind of stupid considering how many votes Trump got and how many votes Biden got as a run-in, as a write-in. I mean, he's a write-in, and he's got like a pushing like 70,000 votes in a not really very interesting race. And I got to tell you, Pat, I think, you know, you look at the continued economic news that is surprising the experts and how, and this is not just, this is coming off of a really damaging situation with the pandemic. And so this kind of soft landing after that is incredible. And I do feel like the American people are finally going to get it. And for Abby Phillip on CNN to, you know, to try to act like there's this equivalency and nobody cares and everything's crummy. I mean, my feeling is that all hurts democracy. That's this idea that we should all just give up and let, you know, whoever wants, you know, worry about it is just damaging. I mean, that's not what we want to hear from our news media. Look at the issues. Look at the people. So, you know, talk a little bit about, you know, Donald Trump and how he can't seem to put together a coherent sentence these days, and how, you know, how he doesn't know who he's running against. He thinks that Nancy Pelosi and Nikki Haley are the same person. Talk about that a little bit. Don't just, oh, they're old. Cause you know, Biden, yeah, Biden's old. So is Trump, but Biden can't do anything about it. It's not like he can do anything about it. I mean, Trump could do something about all his terrible policies and his hatred and craziness.
Issues. We should talk about issues.
Yeah.
Well, look, here's another New York Times headline. After a barb from Trump, our fashion critic weighs in on Nikki Haley's dress.
Again, oh, yeah.
A real headline in the New York Times because Donald Trump said some nasty things about the dress Nikki Haley wore when she spoke in New Hampshire on Tuesday night, which, again, makes him look bad. But somehow it makes the New York Times look worse when they do a follow-up saying our fashion critic weighs in on Nikki Haley's dress. Again, begging the journalistic question, why?
Right, why? Right. But this, you know, today in unnecessary journalism is what I call that. And, you know, that's even worse than that, because not only is it trivial, but it also just like buys into Trump's kind of sexism. I mean, it's goofy. It's like, well, since Trump wants to make the issue all about Nikki Haley's dress, let's make the issue all about Nikki Haley's dress. It's the way that the right wing has been super good at framing issues and at putting out little crumbs, and the news media just follows those crumbs wherever they lead.
Do you think that there's hope that more media outlets will realize that a party that trumpets itself as law and order, but is now beginning to cherry pick which Supreme Court rulings to follow and which Supreme Court rulings to ignore, might show a sense of hypocrisy when you have people like the governor of Texas, you know, openly defying a Supreme Court order of not letting migrants drown?
Yeah, it you have to wonder about that, because I mean, obviously a lot of the majority of the American people were upset about Roe versus Wade being overturned, but I don't remember people saying the Supreme Court doesn't have the right to do it, or that we're going to ignore the Supreme Court. Instead, they tried to do workarounds. You know, various, you know, states have done various things because the Supreme Court's the Supreme Court. I mean, we don't particularly like the way, you know, Mitch McConnell, you know, has been stealing Supreme Court seats, but at the same time, you know, that's the system, and I think it's best to work in the system. And Pat, I'm curious what you think about this, because it seems to me that the news media have have underplayed that story, the story about Texas and all these other red states kind of saying, you know, we're going to ignore the Supreme Court on the border. And I just wonder whether the news media is afraid to make it into a big issue because it could become a big issue. And I think that, and maybe I think they're a little afraid of it because it does feel a little bit like Civil War II, or at least like the Little Rock desegregation crisis in 1957 when Eisenhower had to send in the 101st Airborne.
It does strike me as some media outlets saying that they don't want to unintentionally play a role in exacerbating the conflict, but that still doesn't remove the need to report on the conflict, to right. report on the fact that the, you know, the governor of Texas and now, you know, other Republican governors and ex-governors have, you know, come to his defense saying, yes, he should be able to pick and choose what Supreme Court rulings to follow. It is something that should be talked about more, maybe not to the point of stressing, you know, will there be armed conflict, but simply noting the lack of respect for small d democracy that these Republicans are showing here.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, go ahead.
It just seems like it's been really underplayed in the New York Times, Washington Post, and major media because I think they're afraid of it. I think they really are. And I'm kind of a little afraid of it. I don't want no nuts with guns shooting at fellow Americans.
No, but unfortunately, I think the nuts with guns who might start shooting might do so on orders of Governor Greg Abbott. That's right. The thing that gets to me. Mark Jacob, author, former Chicago Tribune Metro editor, thank you so much. Have a really good start to the weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you later.
All right. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Jim Zantel, former U.S. attorney, and somebody who now has Morning Cannolis, a weekend show across the Civic Media Radio Network on legal issues, perhaps none more so than the legal issues facing the twice impeached, 91 charges against him, disgraced ex-president. We'll see if some of the things that he's saying and that his attorneys are saying about how certain laws don't apply to Trump carries any kind of legal water whatsoever. Jim Zantel coming up next. You're up north. Making note one more time of the anniversary of Eddie Van Halen, who would have been 69 years old today, passed away in 2020, but gave us so many great guitar solos over the years. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Zantel is going to join us in just a sec, but first just a little bit of breaking news from Governor Evers' office announcing that he is appointing Milwaukee State Senator Lena Taylor to be a judge in Milwaukee County Circuit Court, Branch 41. Taylor will complete a term that's been vacated for another year and a half or so. Lena Taylor has been in the legislature first as a state representative in 2003 and then a state senator in 2005. I served alongside her for 4 years and could tell you all about her career, her dedication, her personal style, and you know, how much she will make an incredible judge for the folks in Milwaukee. So congratulations to soon-to-be former Senator Lena Taylor, soon-to-be Judge Taylor, getting that appointment from Governor Evers. All right, let's bring on Jim Zantel. You can catch him on the weekends here across the Civic Media Radio Network, speaking about all things legal and beyond. James, how are you this morning?
Pat, delighted to be with you this morning, and important to talk about these cutting-edge issues, both here in Wisconsin and way out in Washington, other places around the nation. Good to be with you.
Yeah, without a doubt. And you know, we talk so much about the, you know, the political end of these things, and it, you know, for good reason. But there are the legal questions that need to be examined more deeply. We've talked about, is Trump, you know, qualified for the ballot or not under the 14th Amendment, and what's this about, you know, presidential immunity, and how absolute should it be? So I'm really glad that you're free to help us tackle some of these things in a bit more detail. As you look at all of these, I'm actually going to let you pick the one that's first, as you see the several issues on the legal landscape, is there one to you that either you find most interesting, most troubling, most challenging as courts weigh all of these many things facing Donald Trump?
There are actually three matters that are either right now or potentially going to be before the Supreme Court. I'm going to pick the second one on my list. It has some combination pad of those things, interesting, challenging, curious along the way. And that is this issue related to immunity, which has gotten an awful lot of attention from the national media, appropriately so. But I will tell you right off the bat that the concept that Donald Trump and his attorneys are advancing is, this is not a legal word, it's a word that all of us can appreciate and embrace, which is ridiculous. It's absurd. We would call it a frivolous argument. The notion that the president of the United States of America is completely immune from prosecution for acts that he or one day she may take in office is quite literally absurd. If you think about it, this is the basis upon which actually we established our nation, right? We got rid of the king. We got rid of folks who are going to be completely immune from touching by any government authorities out there. And if indeed, and it cannot do it, if indeed the appeals court, the Supreme Court, says that indeed a president is immune from prosecution, that quite literally is the end of our republic. Then we've reestablished a kingdom in this country. What's the status of that case right now? Well, again, this comes out of the district court in the District of Columbia. There's a woman named Kanya Chutkan, outstanding federal judge, and she's presiding over this major case involving insurrection and interference with the 2020, with January 6th and the counting of the 2020 votes. And that case is pending before the district court. What Donald Trump has done is he has raised this issue that he should be immune from that criminal prosecution, presumably others, based upon this, again, completely vapid and non-existent concept of executive presidential immunity. She ruled against him a compelling 50-page order saying, no, not even close. In America, we do not have kings, we have presidents. Went up to the Court of Appeals, which is where it is right now, the DC Court of Appeals. And they had argument on it about 3 weeks ago. Hopefully, sometime soon, maybe even today, Pat, we'll get an order out of that court. Again, has to be that this idea, this concept will be rejected. When that happens, and that's my prediction for you this morning, when that happens, Donald Trump could seek an appeal, another review of that by the United States Supreme Court, another level on this moving stage, if you will, up the courts. My hope is that the Supreme Court will also look at this and say, this is ridiculous. We're not even taking it on. Send it back to Judge Chutkan, and then she can go ahead with this trial. It is both fascinating, ridiculous, absurd, but it's also right now holding up. It is holding up what I would offer to be the single most important of these trials that Donald Trump is facing right now, the one having to do with interference on January 6th before and arguably after as well. That's why it's so important, even though it's a ridiculous notion.
It is, but it's taking a long time. And these, you know, the clock is ticking in all sorts of levels. And so there's definitely a frustration that I express and that others feel as well. But in terms of what the U.S. Supreme Court will do, you have outlined or predicted, you know, what is at one end of the spectrum, and that is that the court may just, you know, wave it off immediately and without any comment and just say, we're not even taking this up. As you know, the other extreme of that spectrum is that enough of the right-wing justices on the U.S. Supreme Court say, yeah, we are going to take it. We are going to, you know, hear the case. We are going to take our sweet time coming up with something. And in the end, you know, we're going to go with our political ideology rather than what's actually good for the republic. And, you know, regular listeners to this show know that I'm always looking for somebody to talk me off the ledge and in my cynicism that this is, you know, what could potentially happen in this country.
Right. They have certainly done things in the past that smack of politics, right, and partisan views in America. So your concerns, Pat, I hate to tell you, are not unfounded on this glorious morning in Wisconsin here. So let's go down that road, which is the other option. It takes four justices, four of the nine, to decide to do what's called grant certiorari, which is the legal kind of Latin way of saying we will take this on and review it. If four of them say, yes, indeed, we want to review whatever the D.C. Court of Appeals does, then it's before the Supreme Court, And then this notion of getting this case tried at the lower court before Judge Chutkan, this is this major four-count indictment against Donald Trump for election interference, that then is pushed off probably into the summer, if not beyond. Because what will happen then is the court will grant that motion, that request. They will presumably, they could even put it on an expedited basis, but they will direct the parties to file briefs. Lawyers like to write lots of things, probably have oral argument. That will be one to watch. And then decide that afterwards. We're already frustrated, as you just indicated, Pat, by the fact that the Court of Appeals could have done this virtually overnight, still waiting 3 weeks down the road. That would add presumably a couple more months to all of this. And then even if Judge Chutkan is able to schedule this on sometime in summer, maybe even during convention time, July and August of this year, if that happens, we're right up against the election and all bets are off then in terms of the impact that that might have.
And only feeds into that talking point of, trying to actually interfere with this election when it is more like this is how the wheels of justice turn, and it has taken this long to get to this point. So to the other matter, and that is ballot eligibility,
yep.
I would say this about the 14th Amendment. When people said to me as a legislator, or they just say it all about, laws are so complicated and they're tough to read and they're so complex, and my response has always been, yeah, because if they're too simple, if they're too basic, it's tough to understand them. And I think this 14th Amendment is a great example. The way that it's written, again, might seem to have a plain English meaning, but in the courts, it seems to be like, well, does Donald Trump have to be convicted of insurrection? What exactly is insurrection and so forth? What's your feeling on where this ballot eligibility under the 14th Amendment matter is going to come down?
Right. And so this one actually is before the Supreme Court right now. They've granted cert on this issue coming out of Colorado. There's also a Maine issue that's pending out there, M-A-I-N-E issue. It's kind of on hold until the Colorado case is decided. And here, once again, the Supreme Court has directed that briefs be filed, oral argument coming up relatively soon. As to your key principle, very good point, Pat, the language of the Section 3 of the 14th Amendment seems to suggest, hey, you engage in insurrection against the United States trying to overthrow the government after having once taken an oath to be true and allegiant to the United States of America, you can't serve in an office. And we know that there's at least one judge out there in New Mexico that in a local case invoked that based upon a conviction of an individual for January 6th rioting. Here, again, as you said, many, many issues before the courts. What was significant, I think, about this is that in Colorado, people forget about this, there was actually a trial on this. We actually had witnesses and documents and people coming forth and testifying under oath. And it was in the wake of that trial about whether or not there was an insurrection and whether Donald Trump participated in it that the lower court judge, the trial judge in Colorado, found that, yes, indeed, insurrection and indeed Donald Trump participated. And then she went into this strange doctrine, actually, that under the language, Pat, that you've just identified, that Donald Trump is not subject to that language because the presidency is not one of the officials covered by that. Very curious, goes up to the Supreme Court. And this is the principal point I would make for you and all your wonderful listeners. And that is that the Colorado Supreme Court wrote a very, very compelling opinion. I don't normally assign a lot of reading to your listeners, but if you have some opportunities, still pull that up. Colorado Supreme Court, compelling in terms of summarizing the evidence below, making the finding that insurrection happened, placing Donald Trump, based upon his statements in the Ellipse and other things, right in the middle of that, and finding, yes, indeed, that it does apply to him. And so that's the basis upon which the Colorado Supreme Court has taken him off of the Republican primary ballot coming up relatively soon. And that's the matter that is now before the Supreme Court. Again, in the morning of predictions, perhaps, what I will say is that the Supreme Court, to your point about sometimes not following the law on this very compelling opinion when you read it under the 14th Amendment, Supreme Court's got a lot of off-ramps, if you will. They could find, well, there was some procedural problem here. They could find, if they go back to the lower court, that, well, the 14th Amendment doesn't apply to the presidency, which is very curious. They could do that. They could say only the legislature can make this determination, that you need a conviction, all kinds of things short of simply embracing and affirming the Colorado Supreme Court in this matter.
Yeah, a lot of off-ramps. The same people that are always arguing about people getting off on technicalities, we'll now look at them as off-ramps. So this is a bit of a taste of what you hear from Jim on a Saturday show. Well, what other things do you have coming up for discussion purposes for our listeners?
Sure. And we've always talked about this as well, as I mentioned, Pat. We'll chat about it again even tomorrow morning. There is this third case out there that, frankly, to answer your very first question, among the most significant. It hasn't gotten a lot of media attention, but it's a case called Fisher, F-I-S-C-H-E-R. Donald Trump is not named in this case. It's one of the 1,200 people who have been either charged, convicted, sentenced for the insurrection on January 6th. Fisher is raising the issue that the statute under which the federal government and the U.S. Attorney's Office there prosecuted him is not applicable to his conduct. It has to, for your listeners, it's Section 1915 of Title 18 only. Federal prosecutors are focused enough to know the exact names and numbers of that. But the reality is that that's significant, because if the Supreme Court, and that the Fisher case not scheduled for oral argument yet, Supreme Court says Mr. Fisher is right. He was prosecuted under the wrong statute. Why is that significant for Donald Trump? Why is it the third in this series? Because Donald Trump, two of the four counts under which Donald Trump was also prosecuted are under this Section 1915. Supreme Court comes back in Fisher and says, can't use it for this kind of conduct, and that the case against him is sliced in half by the Supreme Court. That's the one that I'm a whole lot more concerned about, even beyond these other two that are out there. We're going to be talking more about that tomorrow and the weeks ahead.
To which I can only imagine, more than half of America just doing a face, a hand of the face, if this is really what it's all come down to. Jim Santel, good to talk to you. It's been a while. Let's do this again real soon and get more of this on Saturday mornings from your show.
Always delighted to be with you, Pat, and have a good week. We will talk again soon about things important to Wisconsin around the country. Take care.
All right. Take care, Jim. Thank you so much. When we come back, we'll talk to Dan Schumacher, and we'll get the weekend kicked off looking at some of the sports that are coming up for your entertainment on this Friday, January 26th, live from Lake Wissota across the Civic Media Radio Network. This is Up North News Radio.
Get away.
I can't even introduce the two deadheads over here, Dan and Greg, without them jumping right into what the tune is this week. So Greg, you found a little diamond in the rough there?
Yeah, I found one. I look under like tracks that fans know, deep cuts, no fair weather fans.
So this is from the era what they call disco dead.
Disco Dead.
Look up the cover, and it says everything.
Yep, it's a white album.
Yep,
what they call, and they are all dressed up like John Travolta in complete white.
Yep,
leisure suits, everything for the cover of the thing. Shakedown Street came out of this one. A bunch of songs that the Dope Deadhead said they're turning into disco. It was like the late 70s. And so they called this album Disco Dead.
Yeah, and there's plenty of wind blowing their hair, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yikes. Well, it was the 70s.
We
did a lot of stuff. I was too young for that. Before I get going with Dan in sports, it's Friday. It's the end of the week. It's been a long week. What's the phrase I was looking for, Greg? When one takes your face and puts it to your hand and your face, is it what? What
Keep
is
going.
It?
Keep going. But put the
he sends me this note. A face palm, Pat. It's called a face palm, and I could not get face plant out of the way, which is when you stumble and take a digger that way. But no, face palm is what the country would do.
And it makes this noise. That noise.
Yeah, exactly. There's a great Leslie Nielsen police squad, thing with the entire theater of people, clapping their hand to their forehead.
There is a rumor they're going to remake that show with Liam Neeson. There's a rumor.
Liam Neeson, really?
It might destroy his career, but I don't care.
Okay, it's not going to include O.J. Simpson, I hope.
No, no, he was with Taylor Swift at the Chiefs game the other day, though.
I don't even know what to do with that information. Not at all.
I'm not kidding you, man. They showed something on the internet where Taylor Swift is in the suite because they were playing the Bills, and they transposed O.J. Simpson cheering in the background.
Oh, okay. There. You got me there. All right.
Yeah, it was kind of funny.
I knew a suspect when you said on the internet.
Yep. Artificial intelligence, man. It's I like my personal fake intelligence over here. Hey, what do you make, Dan, of Doc Rivers coming out of the broadcast booth to coach the Bucks? 4 years, $40 million. Let me make this bold prediction: Doc Rivers will not coach the Milwaukee Bucks for 4 years. There, wow. I said it.
I will tell you, as I sat at one of my favorite establishments here up in Ashland, hearing two guys next to me argue about it. About the Bucks, I tell you what, if you take a deep dive into it, why did he get fired? Why did he get fired in his first year? He was second in the division. He had a winning.
You're talking about Adrian Griffin here. Why did he get fired?
Yeah. Why did he get fired?
That was my question.
What I was telling you, as I told you my name in my book, because you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
There's another reason why he was fired, and it wasn't because of his performance as a coach.
Do tell.
That's what I believe.
You know, it could be an interpersonal thing. I mean, you heard the same thing with LeBron had an incident like that in Cleveland with one of the coaches where, again, they were getting off to a good start. LeBron mm-hmm. went to the ownership and said, you got to get rid of him. And, you know, you can do that in the NBA. Coaches, I mean, and the NBA is the one where the players, I mean, they rule the roost entirely. You know, there's just no getting around it. But, you know, so Doc will be there.
But I don't see Giannis leading that way. I think if anybody's going to have a strong voice on that from a player situation, it would be Giannis. But I don't see him as that kind of character guy that's going to go to management and say, I demand, you know, to get rid of this coach.
Maybe not. But, I mean, again, what we see of Giannis is what we see on the court and the persona that he wants you to have. And it works. You know, he was the top vote getter for the All-Star game. Announced yesterday he'll be the Eastern Conference captain. Damian Lillard will be on his 8th All-Star team, his first one outside of Portland. So it'll be a heck of a game February 18th. But in the meantime, the Bucks get back in action tonight. They host the Cleveland Cavaliers. Then tomorrow they host the New Orleans Pelicans. And you can catch the Bucks on Oshkosh Air Support, News from the Center, Lake Air in Amory, WRJN in Racine, and 98Q Country in Park Falls. Then you've got the Badger men's basketball team, 13th ranked in the country. They are hosting Michigan State 7 tonight at the Kohl Center. And Dan, I don't know that I'm ready to say that the Badgers are they peaking too soon, or is this a team that is, you know, the little engine that could and is just going to keep climbing up the rankings from this point forward?
No, I never really thought of a Greg Gard team as an up and down team. I've always felt that they portrayed their coach's personality, which usually Greg is very even. I mean, he'll get fired up once in a while on a call or something, but in my own personal interactions with Coach Gard, he's a very calm, very measured in many ways when he talks to somebody, when he interacts with one of his players and things like that. So I think the Badgers are for real. I got a kick out of the fact is that people were complaining that he's over in Minnesota rating players for recruits because he signed, I think, two kids out of Lakeville South High School from the same basketball team, signed them and got commitments from them. So – you know, he's been very steady. He's been consistent. You know what you got with Coach Gard. I think the Badgers are in a good position to make a nice run.
All right. Now we go to championship weekend to find out who's going to the Super Bowl. We got the Lions and the Niners. We got the Chiefs and the Ravens. Who you got?
Well, I cheered hard last week for the Green Bay Packers because I wanted to see them play Detroit in the NFC championship game. Yeah, and then really
would have been awesome. Yeah.
But, you know, I'm a North guy. So I'm all for Detroit right now. I'm all in on Detroit. I think what a great story. But I'll tell you what, the 49ers are one hell of a team, and that McCaffrey is a stud. He is a stud player.
I have worked so hard. I worked hard throughout the season not to talk about fantasy football because I know that that will just turn a lot of people off.
Right.
So I'm only going to say now from last weekend that Christian McCaffrey was like my stud on the on my fantasy football team. So, I mean, he was my friend all year long.
Yeah.
So for him to then be the one that breaks the Packers' hearts was poetic justice and should teach me to never play fantasy football again.
You heard it here, folks. Pat hates the Packers.
All right, I got 30 seconds left. So Chiefs.
I got the Ravens. I got the Ravens and Detroit in the Super Bowl. Ravens, unfortunately, winning. That's who I think was going to happen. But
look, Baltimore will have earned it, though. I mean, one heck of a ride, I tell you.
All those youngsters out there listening on the radio, watch how Mr. McCaffrey plays the game of football. He acts like he's been there before. He scores a touchdown. He flips that ball to the ref, and he looks for a teammate to celebrate with. It isn't about him. He's one of the most ideal football players you'd want on your team to lead by example.
All right. Thank you, Dan. Have a wonderful weekend.
You bet.
Greg, have a great time at the Laughing Tap, and we'll talk to you on Monday morning. And the rest of you have a great weekend. Thanks for tuning in. Keep it right here on the Civic Media Radio Network, and we'll see you for Up North News Radio Monday morning at 6:00.